This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of November 16th. I'm John Gibson, and with me, wow, it's such a nice time. It's a beautiful, kind of late-ish in the evening, Sunday night, is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm being studious. I'm good, and I'm being studious.
I don't know about that. I think there's a certain paper you need to get done that hasn't been done, and you've been putting off all day.
But it's being processed.
Trust the process.
Exactly. I could not have said it better myself. Things are moving along, and I'm fine. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I had a busy day at work. I had a busy weekend. Last week was fun. The Disneyland trip was awesome.
Right.
The kids walked, little four-year-olds walked about 8 kilometers and didn't complain once. I cannot believe it.
Okay. That means there needs to be drug checks or something.
Well, as most people who know me know, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I've never even been high. So there's no chance of that on my end. I don't know what wifey did when I wasn't looking.
Hashtag high heat.
But not one complaint, and Disneyland was fun. And although it has changed, man, if you don't have an app on your phone, don't think about going to Disneyland right now. You can't do anything if you don't have the app. Yeah. Nothing.
Really?
Yeah, Disneyland is different from...
I haven't...
This is not your daddy's Disneyland.
I haven't been to Tokyo Disneyland in whole, maybe 25 years.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. Are you in for a shock? 25 years. I hope you can find it.
It hasn't moved. I still see it if I get on the KO line.
All right. The KO line. Well, speaking of KO, it looks like this virus is going to KO us all if we don't get it under control. But I don't know. The numbers are going up here in Tokyo, but you know, I can see why in some respects, but it's going up all over the world. So let's get it together, people. But thank you again to all the healthcare workers. We appreciate what you do.
And I want to thank all the people in Japan who are wearing your masks and doing your civic duty. Much appreciated.
Yep. Thank you very much. All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Dragons hitting coach Alonzo Powell. We're going to discuss the PLCS, the Japan series, and a whole lot more. And if we have time, we're going to hit some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so on Thursday night, we had the privilege of sitting down with Dragons' first-year batting coach, Alonzo Powell, a friend of the program, a friend of mine, I think, quite frankly, a friend of many.
Yes.
Almost everybody he knows because he's so professional and he's such a great person. And look, everyone in the organization, in any organization, plays a role in success or losing or whatever happens with the team. So we just can't credit him on the fact that we saw maybe some subtle improvements by the offense and saw the team finish in the top three for the first time in 8 seasons or 8 years. But definitely we want to give them some praise, and we also want to praise the rest of the coaching staff for helping the Dragons, you know, make that move. And not many folks, I think, at the beginning of the season had them finishing that high. I had them finishing second, I think, as many people recall. And if not for that untimely, and there's no good time for a 6-game skid, but the untimely 6-game losing streak near the end of the season, I think they would have been in second place. But hey, credit the Tigers. I had said in the prediction show, I said the Tigers, I see them finishing in second place, but they managed to goof things up all the time. And so I'm going to choose them. I'm going to predict that they'll finish third, but they finished in second. So it was a good run by them as well. Although I think I see a lot of changes in store for that team next season. So that makes it even more difficult to predict what's going to go on. But anyway, Alonzo Powell, he won 3 batting titles in the Central League, as many of you know, and they were all consecutive between 1994 and 96. He was a 2-time All-Star, and he came back to Nagoya and to the Dragons to join his former teammates, Yoshi Yoda, who has just finished his second season in charge of the team. And, you know, they were trying to work the Dragons up the ladder and back someday into the Japan series. And it is not a ladder system. Sometimes you can work your way up and then get close and fall back down to the bottom. But hopefully they can build on this year, next season. And hopefully there's a playoffs format and they can reach the playoffs and maybe do something and get back to the Japan series. But we spoke on topics from Yudai Ono to the progression of his hitters, young and old, and more. So let's take a listen. All right. This is such a privilege, and it's so great to be able to talk to the hitting coach of the Chunichi Dragons, Alonzo Powell. Thank you very much for taking the time on your private time in the evening to talk to us, man.
No, thanks for having me. You know, long year, unbelievable 2020. You know, we made it through the season. Fortunately for the Dragons, you know, nobody contracted the coronavirus, which was a huge accomplishment. And, you know, it was good to be back in Japanese baseball.
Yeah, I'd certainly applauded all the players and staff and coaches and everybody involved, and especially when they started letting in the fans, the spreaders. They let them into the venues, but you guys made it through, and I'm proud of everybody involved in MPB. Obviously, the Lotte Marines had a cluster outbreak, but they played through that and reached the playoffs, so it was a good season all around for everybody, I think. So, first question tonight is a softball to start, so, and, you know, that's just for you from a hitter's perspective. I wanted to get you a good swing to start it off. how do you think Yudai Ono turned his season around to become so dominant from a hitter's perspective? Because you're obviously not the pitching coach.
Yeah, you know, I just think coming out of the beginning of the season, you know, it was difficult for everybody because it was really difficult to prepare. Nobody knew when they were going to start. And, you know, all of a sudden we get the go time. We had 10 days to get it going. And, you know, my opinion, and I'm sure, you know, he would probably tell you the same thing, you know, his first maybe six starts, he just wasn't sharp. Mm-hmm. You know, he was missing location, you know, walking guys, uncharacteristic of Ono. And, you know, and he was getting hit around a little bit. And, you know, a couple games he pitched well. We didn't score early for him. And then all of a sudden, you know, he found his rhythm. He found his stride. And, you know, that last two-thirds of the season was phenomenal. You know, the only person I've probably seen that good live in the same dugout was Felix Hernandez when he won the Cy Young in 2010.
Wow, high praise. Well, I got him for the Salamura Award. We have to see what the old curmudgeons come up with when they have their little meeting. But, you know, Ono blew all that third time through the lineup stuff completely out of the water. So from the batter's side, how much does that matter when you're going to see a guy for a third time in a game?
Well, you know, I think it's to a batter's advantage the more times you see a pitcher. You know, you get to see his pitches, you get to see how they move. And a lot of cases, pitchers tire a little bit late in the game. You know, they're apt to make mistakes. But as you said, you know, Ono just blew that right out of the water. You know, it didn't matter. You know, fourth time, you know, fifth time. You know, really, the way he was pitching, it was really only three times through because he was just mowing down through lineups. Mm. And, you know, he would only really see you four times. You know, it wasn't like they were hitting him around to get to the fifth time, you know, I mean, and just based on stuff, I mean, he was dominating games. And, you know, and there, you know, you have the analytical dilemma, you know, aka you know, the Tampa Rays,
Kevin Cash, yeah.
you look at the stuff and the stuff that he was putting out there and the way he was executing his pitching, you know, it was a no-brainer to leave him in those games. You know, I think he finished up with 10 complete games, I would like to say. You know, he had that run of, what, seven in a row, and it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was unbelievable to watch. Now, you guys as a team, you had an awful start with the injuries, and I want to say there was a lot of untimely hitting, and it just seemed like there was you guys were lost at the beginning. What changed for the offense?
You know, I think the pitching help change the offense. You know, we got a lot better quality starting pitching, you know, with Fukutani coming in along with Ono. You know, we had Yadiel Rodriguez step up and pitch really well as he got promoted to the main team. You know, we solved our bullpen issues. You know, we had, you know, we made some mistakes in the bullpen along with the hitting.
Yeah, Toshiya Okada was the closer at the beginning of the season. That changed.
You know, like I said, you know, before, you know, it was really difficult. You know, this is a year of, you know, you just can't pinpoint it because it was different. You know, it was different the way everybody had to get ready. You know, I think a lot of guys weren't as sharp. And you can tell with the pitching early in the year, you know, I think only Sugano was the one that just jumped out there and dominated from day one. But, you know, it took a lot of the starters and a lot of the relievers time to get their, to get their rhythm and to hit their stride.
Well, you also, I know you were coaching both the top team and the farm team, but you also moved to the bench. And that seemed to help the team a little bit, as I recall.
Well, you know, it's, you know, they were calling me lucky coach there for a while. And throughout the, you know, the end of the season. But, you know, as you know, it has nothing to do with me. It's about the personnel. You know, I'm not one that wants to credit. You know, I'm there to do a job, to give some advice, to help, you know, anywhere I can. And, it just maybe came at the right time when the team turned the page and started playing well.
But since you're on the bench there, were you able to help some of the players make an in-game adjustment with some of the things that they were seeing or doing?
Oh, yeah, you know, of course. You know, there was definitely dialogue, you know, between myself, you know, and the other hitting coaches and the players, you know, a little bit of in-game adjustments, things that, you know, we would all see, and we would relay that information to the players, you know, to help them, you know, try to make adjustments.
All right, now the tough questions start. Now, you guys did finish in third place, and congratulations on that. And I know Yoda, the manager, is very competitive, so I didn't expect you guys to struggle the entire season. But the team was outscored heavily. You had the fewest runs in the Central League. What's an area you want to see the team improve in next year?
Well, you know, as a team, you know, we want to improve in every area. You know, the run differential, you know, we kind of blew the run differential out the window, you know, because it was crazy this year because it was close games we won, one-sided games we lost. So, yeah. And again, it doesn't matter about a run differential. You know, if you score one more than the other team, you're going to win. You know, that's the bottom line. But, we have to improve offensively. You know, we have to do a better job with timely hitting, you know, getting guys over, you know, executing bunts. You know, our defense was solid. You know, pitching, you know, I'm sure we want to improve on the starting pitching and maybe, you know, add a extra lefty to help Fuku in tight situations late in the pen, you know. But, you know, again, you know, we have a lot of room to where we need to improve. You know, we had a lot of guys offensively, you know, that had down years. But, you know, at the same time, you know, we did the little things that we needed to do, you know, to win games and stay competitive.
Yeah, and I know a lot of times for me, I would see a Dragons runner reach first. This was this was the entire season because it seemed like it happened a lot. But I was thinking a Dragons runner reaching first base was trouble because you guys hit into so many double plays. And I didn't look up the record for one season, but you had 101 double plays in 120 games. So what can you do to limit that number next year?
Well, you know, I think number one we have to do a little bit better with pitch selection. You have to understand the pitches that you need to swing at with runners in base. You know, there's certain times to, you know, a strikeout in certain situations is better than a swinging at a bat pitch, putting it in play, and hitting into a double play.
Mm.
You know, obviously, you know, there's a lack of speed on our team that we would like to address to get a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it comes down a lot to pitch selection. And, you know, you got to understand in those situations, you know, you want to try to drive the ball. But, you know, it's not like guys are trying to hit in a double play.
Oh, definitely.
You know, you know, you have to, you know, again, you have to understand what pitches you need to swing at to try to elevate the ball and to keep the ball off the ground. Because, you know, with the, you know, the way baseball is today, you know, every team basically knows where you're going to hit the ball on the ground. And they have somebody there. And if you can't hit the ball with, you know, tremendous exit velocity to get the ball by them, you know, because every infielder, you know, is quality enough and is good enough that they're going to catch a ground ball. And then in a lot of cases, when they do catch it, you know, they're going to turn double play on it.
Yeah, it seemed, I mean, I guess what, as a fan watching some of the games, there weren't even two strikes on some of the guys. They didn't have to swing at some of the pitches they were swinging at, and they would ground into double plays. And that can be, I'm sure, frustrating for the coaches as well. But last night you guys played your final game of the regular season, and in the post-game interview, Yoda, the manager, did like a wrap-up of the season, and he said the main difference between the Dragons and the first-place Giants was just being able to produce in leverage situations. What's your take on the gap between the Giants and the Dragons this year?
Well, you know, the Giants are a phenomenal team. You know, they have a lot more depth from top to bottom than we do. You know, we still have a little ways to go to catch up with the Giants. You know, although we, you know, competitively during the season, you know, we play well against the Giants. I think we're one of the teams that gave the Giants the most problems, you know. But, again, you know, they're the class of the league right now. And, you know, we have to improve. And, you know, we have to get better. You know, we have to continue to add pieces to the puzzle to get our depth better. So if we do have an injury, we can have somebody come in and do a adequate job to stabilize it for that guy to come back. Or, you know, if that guy's out for an extended period of time, come in and challenge somebody for a position.
Yeah, I know that's easier said than done, and depth is not something that comes easily as well.
No, it doesn't.
Now, let's see, you guys had that unreal stretch of 37 consecutive games of winning when you were leading after the sixth inning. But conversely, you struggled to come back in games when you were trailing after the sixth inning. So how do you change this for next season?
Well, you know, again, you know, you would like to see some guys step up and play to the next level in their capabilities. You know, you like to see guys come back and be a little bit of a different baseball player when you see them next year and have some improvement. You know, I think power has a lot to do with that. You know, the Nagoya Dome isn't really conducive for home runs, and it showed by our home and away record, you know, because the Nagoya Dome kind of stifles both teams, and we know how to play there. We can execute there. Mm-hmm. And our record showed it, but now you go on the road, you know, in the Tokyo Dome, Yokohama, Jingu, you know, those ballparks are more conducive to home runs. And if we didn't get solid pitching and the other team hit balls out of the park, you know, we had problems. But, you know, we got to try to find a little bit more power and, you know, again, execute, you know, like Yoda said. And in leverage situations, you know, again, you know, I said it in the beginning of the year, you know, yes, we're not a home run team, but, you know, we have to be able to hit some doubles with guys on base and get some hits and timely chance, you know, and like a bases loaded situation for us. If you can get a bases clearing double in the Nagoya Dome, you know, that would be like a 3-run home run in the Tokyo Dome for us.
You know, I did look at the numbers, and you talked about the lack of base stealing. You guys had 33 steals, and only Yokohama had fewer with 30, and you guys had 70 home runs, which is the fewest, I believe, in both leagues. So, yeah, you said find power, and I'm just wondering how you go about finding power. Is it something that the guys you have now can change in their swings or in their approach and find that power, or how do you go about that?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, we have some guys that do have the capability of driving balls, getting extra base hits, and hitting home runs. You know, now, you know, we made a big wholesale change with our foreign players at the end of the season. You know, hopefully we can acquire somebody or find somebody you know, that, that have some power out there that can that help our team. And, you know, just get better again, get better as a group, you know, being able to manufacture runs, doing the little things to get runs in, you know, hitting that ground ball, you know, to get a run in, hitting that fly ball to get a sack fly when needed. But just being able to score more run, you know, to help our pitching staff, because our pitching staff's pretty good and our relievers are pretty good, and just get them a lead and get them in a situation where, you know, it's not a one-run game every night to where you have to execute every pitch, you know, because that's very stressful. And we can get them a lead and give them a little bit of breathing room. You know, I think, you know, the Dragons could, you know, contend with anybody in the Central League.
Now, you, last question. You had some young guys come up here and there and play, Nao being one of them, Ishikawa another one. Do you see anybody maybe next season being able to get, I don't know, a couple hundred at-bats on the top team who might be able to add a little something to the team?
Well, you know, that's always a possibility. You know, both of those guys came up when we had some injuries. You know, Ishikawa, in my opinion, held his own after about, you know, he struggled there for about 12 to 15 at-bats. And then his last, you know, 10 to 20, I don't know exactly how many he had, but his last few at-bats, you know, he handled himself well, hit some balls hard, you know, got some hits. You know, Nao came up and struggled, got a hit last night, and I think is next to last at-bat. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, you know, you're talking about two kids that are 19 and 20 years old. You know, they're close to being ready, but, you know, it's about development, and these guys got to come back with the hunger to push one of the veteran guys for a job and be more consistent. You know, every coach, every manager, you know, is looking for consistency. And, you know, if these young guys can come up and be consistent and, you know, push these guys for jobs, and, you know, that's the type of athleticism that we need, because, you know, both of them are excellent athletes, and, you know, both of them have bright futures. But, you know, it's going to come to a time to where, you know, they're going to have to come up and show everybody that they're capable of playing every day.
All right. Well, I wish we could talk to you every day, but we can't. But I know you're going to be here in the off season, and look forward to talking to you probably early in spring, spring training, which is February 1st. It's still too cold for me. I can't believe they start this thing with the snow on the ground here in Tokyo. But anyway, we will talk to you soon. And we also want to do one of those panel discussions like we had before. So hopefully we can have you on again soon.
Oh, please. Again, you know, thank you for having me. And I'm all in. That panel discussion was awesome this year. You know, with Zach and Marty, with yourself and Mr. Allen, everything was great. You know, and again, you know, I listen to the show regularly, so, you know, great to be on. And you know, anything I can do to help you guys, I'm all for it.
Awesome, awesome. All right, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot, John.
All right, so a Felix Hernandez comp for Ono there. That's pretty awesome. Thanks a lot, Alonzo. Appreciate the time, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
So
thank you for referring to me as Mr. Allen. When the first time we ever met, it was because I was dragging your name through the dirt. I wasn't really. I was trying to.
Was that a play on the Dragons?
About it, but I you know, he Alonzo is such a gentleman, and I never meant it. I never meant any harm. He wished I could put a better spin on things, not for him, but for his family and friends who are reading the paper.
Okay. All right.
Well, always a gentleman, always great to have him on the show. And I echo what John said. Now, this is great. This is great stuff, because he's there. He's in the trenches, so to speak. If mm-hmm. not firing the bullets, he's in the trenches with the Dragons and seeing the different little changes and difficulties going on
mm-hmm.
at ground level that none of us see, you know, that he sees more of the process. And of course, mm-hmm. before I get onto his questions, the one thing I'd really love to hear him talk about is Akira Nao, because I don't see it from his numbers. I did, you know, I saw him at the end of the season. I saw a couple of swings and I went, wow, that's a good swing. This doesn't look like a guy who can't hit. So right. I wonder if it's, you know, I'm really curious what his adjustment process has been. If it's a case of he's a small guy, but he was well regarded as a high school hitter.
As many are coming up when that high school tournament is going on and they do well, yeah.
If those who go in the first round of the, you know, who are highly sought after in the first round of the draft do.
Correct.
And he was a guy who's essentially who has his results have been an abject failure. I can't really say anything other than that, but it's not all, you know, it doesn't matter what he's done. It matters what he's going to do. And if he had had, say, 800 at-bats like the ones he's had so far in the minors and knowing last year he was hurt, I would say he can't play. But I'm curious to see what Mr. Powell has to say about him, and hopefully we'll get to hear that next time because I really would like a more of a deep dive into his stuff. Okay, anyway, it was quite interesting. I thought his portrayal of the team's development through the season of Ohno and sort of the issues with the guys they expected to produce on offense was accurate. I know Ryosuke Hirata was shelved pretty soon, pretty early in the process after about a few weeks due to
he was injured first and then
lower body fit
back production first. Yeah.
Well, actually, that was only after they said poor results, and then they said lower body fitness.
Yeah, I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg, actually, but it was a combination of
So
injury and lack of production
player for them. So, right. But having said that, excuse my choice of phrase there, they did start getting these blocks of players who were productive, you know. Ariel Martinez and Rydell Martinez, although I'm going to use pitchers, Yariel Rodriguez and Takumi Kinoshita, the catcher. Oh, is it Takumi? Excuse me. And sure. Dion Viciedo had a real good season. I mean, just as close to his upper levels. And Zuelo Amalte came back healthy for a while and was very good. And even Moises Sierra, when he came in late, had some productive
moments.
Yeah, yeah. So it was not a season without. It wasn't a Dragon season like, well, maybe next year if we get more production from Oshima and Hirata, we'll do better. You know, it wasn't one of those years. I thought Shuhei Takahashi was quite good, you know, except the fact that he was hurt again. But
he was hurt, but this was his best season, hands down. I mean, he played a lot and was very consistent.
Like where he was last year before he got hurt, when he was playing really well. So I was very pleased with a lot of what I saw with the Dragons. And the only thing I would say is, and he mentioned the run differential in the Dragons scoring, and you know, I had to bring this up, scoring fewer runs than they allowed. You know, in this year's standings, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Who cares? Because you win the games, you lose the games. They are what they are.
Right.
But moving forward, it is a problem. If, you know, it's essentially a fever. And you go to your doctor and says, "I'm fit. I feel fine." He says, "No, you've got a fever. There's an issue. If you're consistently scoring fewer runs than you allow, then it's hard to move forward. You need a plan." And of course, that's not the result is not the point. The point is you want to build a team that scores runs and allows fewer. So, does that?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I think his argument was, if I may, that he didn't say it. Of course, he would never say it. But I think it was a rotational issue where they had some good pitchers at the front end of the rotation who were generally keeping them in games, and then they had issues when they had back end of the rotation, and those games got away. So I think essentially what we're saying here is, yeah, they're going to be games that just get away from you, and they're going to be a few of them. But the games that you have a chance to be competitive in, those are the games you have to make your own. And it doesn't matter whether you win it by one or a punch. And if you do this over the course of a season, you have a six-man rotation and two of the guys routinely are poor and you have spot starters, you might get outscored. But if the four in the front end of the rotation are doing better, you're going to win more games. And I think that's what he's talking. I mean, we're interested in stats and all those other things.
No, I think that
I always say the guys on the field are interested in wins.
Yeah.
So you can take all the stats. And I understand what you're saying. It's a fever. Maybe it's not a fever. Maybe it's just a sore toe.
Well, no, it's an issue. Because
a sore toe is an issue, bro. As you know.
Yeah, especially if you're running. Well, okay, let's call it
exactly.
Let's sort of toe. If you're gonna win the 10K over the course of the season, you better not be having a sore toe. So they need some support.
Exactly.
And they gotta score more runs. The biggest problem is scoring more runs.
I hear you.
Respect. But I do like a lot of the things they have working with them, and I'm glad that he was a lucky coach, at least for his, for his good humor. You know, it's a good talking point.
It sure must have been fun, because remember, I think the first time we spoke with him, he was saying how he was not allowed on the bench, that there's a limited number, and then he did get moved down to the bench, and I think we mentioned that as well on the show, and that's basically when they turned things around. But that's also, I think, corresponded with Udai Ono going off on his little Sawamura-worthy run there.
Well, that was
there.
Alonzo was doing, no?
What's that?
That was all due to Alonzo Powell, no?
Oh, yeah. Alonzo helped him out with his...
I thought, and that was interesting. I think I did like your discussion about second, third time around. I thought Alonzo Powell's description of that was pretty good. His stuff is very sharp, and he's hyper efficient. He didn't get worn out, because every time you looked at the pitch count, it's the sixth inning. He's thrown 55 pitches.
Yeah.
So
yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
The league wasn't too much of an issue, and he was challenging. He was being efficient. He was throwing a lot of pitches in the strike until in the strike zone. And he had very, 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 very good command and predictable movement on his pitches. So he could mix them up and people keep guessing. They barrel him up. He did give up a surprising number of home runs for a guy who was that good, but that was pretty much the only damage anybody ever did.
And most of that came early. Before he went on the run. Yeah. So, yeah, I should say most of it, but I think most of it.
Yes.
Well, my jaw didn't drop open, but it was certainly about to fall a little bit, because he made the comp to Felix Hernandez. And like I said, if the curmudgeon crew can't figure this out and make him the Sawamura Award winner, as foreign media members, I think you and Jason and I have to just begin a campaign to change all the misguided voting that occurs across MPB. We got to help them out. We got to do something. We've been complaining about it on the show, but we have to actually get out the signs. Yeah,
I can see how that'll go, because it's always me following the guys out of the room as they go to have their bentos and tea and whatever else to drink with them.
No, man, we gotta get picket signs, and the three of us just march out in front of this.
Oh, yeah. How cute. Oh, the foreign guy is so cute. He keeps talking about these guys.
Well, look, wait. No, we're media members. We call every media outlet we know, and we tell them we're going to do it, and they'll be there with TV cameras. How do you think that looks? We can do something. Look, three voices can do it.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
But Oprah Winfrey when you need her.
Right. Anyway, as many of you might know, my position on the individual awards and titles and all that stuff, that all that stuff to me is like sprinkles and cherries and icing for, you know, cakes and cupcakes and all that other stuff. It's not substance. You know, it's winning. That's what everybody's goal is, and that's what everything should be about. But these things, the individual goals, they're just that for teams that haven't really done that well, and that's something else for them to focus on. But hopefully he gets that. But the one thing I guess we didn't talk about in detail, and you're saying that you'd like to get more about the young kids, including Nao. I remember doing that interview with Yota Kyoda.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I think we talked on the show about, well, I just remember in their rookie year, you said he and Sosuke Genda of the Lions were like twins. I think you called Kyoda Genda's Central League twin. And I said, no, they're not twins. Kyoda's not nearly as fast as Genda. And I think Kyoda showed that. I mean, he was so steady. Not,
but
yeah, he showed.
He's not. But
no, he's
not. Regardless, I mean, they're such similar players in that.
They're similar, but not really, because I don't think Kyoda is a regular base stealer. He's not as good a hitter. He's not as good a defensive player. But, I mean, if you're just going to compare them, A versus B, no. But for what Kyoda gives the Dragons, he's very, very dynamic and he's an essential part of their team. I just wish, I mean, I call him the Fisher, and I think I said it to Alonzo after we finished the interview, because whenever he gets two strikes on him, he goes fishing for sliders and curves in the dirt. And he never, I shouldn't say never, but he strikes out a lot on those pitches. So I call him, the Fisher all season long. Anyway, he's got such a beautiful swing. He actually came on at the end of the season and did fairly well. He started hitting more regularly. And I thought before the season, with that swing and everything, if he fixes his approach and he stops fishing, he could lead the league in the Central League in hits. And so I told Alonzo, I said, I think he's going to lead the league in hits. Well, he didn't. But Yohei Oshima did, and I thought that was a really good good run. But I think this is the last comment I had about the interview, because it was just fun talking to – being able to talk to a coach like this. And, you know, the last time we were able to talk to a coach on the team this often was Tom O'Malley with the Hanshin Tigers. Mm. It has been a while. But Alonzo did throw us that little back foot slider, and I think that was when he said – when he talked about Takaya Ishikawa. Mm-hmm. And he said the kid held his own, you know, after those initial 12 at-bats, he said the kid started to hold his own. So I looked up his game log, and I'm like, what does he mean? Because, you know, here's a kid who ended up finishing at 222, I think, was his batting average, and really didn't do very much at all. And, the last six games or so, He kind of did okay. Not great. He had a two-hit game on July 25th against Hanshin, but not really. Nothing impressive.
The numbers weren't impressive, but
yeah.
It was more of the quality.
But
he was hitting the ball.
That's what my point is, that the back foot slider was that, okay, well, what does he mean? And, you know, I hung up and I started thinking about the interview, and I said, well, what does he mean by that?
Hmm.
Well, you know, Ishikawa was striking out a lot. He sometimes looked overmatched. I think he had issues with pitch recognition and just with his swing. And he started to, while he didn't improve production-wise, he started to get better with pitch recognition. He started to put the bat on the ball more. And he had a couple pinch hit appearances where he came away with hits. And so that's what I think he means. Yeah, and that's why
I think he looked like, by the time he went back to the minors, he looked like he had some plans.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, I can execute this. I can execute that.
Yeah, I think I think he went up there with a plan. I think what you just said, I can execute this plan. I can make this happen. Whereas before, you know, he looked like he wasn't sure.
Sure.
Yeah. And no,
I got that impression, because I was really interested in him. Because of my scouting course in the spring had required me to look at amateur players. And I looked at a lot of the games from Japan's under 18 World Baseball Cup team.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on that team. And so I got to watch a lot of these guys, and I saw him hit a lot. And I was really impressed with you know, his physicality and his swing. And so I did pay a lot of attention. I'd never had a chance, really looked at amateur players that much, except if I was watching Koshien for some reason, you know, some sure. guy caught my eye. So I was sure. paying attention to him, and I noticed that, you know, his first at bats, he looked completely lost. And then he looked much more, yeah, he looked a little self-assured, like if they left him. I think he's almost to the stage where if they just left him in there, he'd be fine.
Yeah. So it's not always about, you know, number of hits. No. You know, coaches are looking for pitch selection, pitch recognition, contact on pitches in the zone.
Oh, no, everything that he—that's for people who have already made, I guess, the basic adjustments, who are going to be regulars. I mean, if you're not looking at that, I mean, if you're looking at, you know, trying to compare advanced metrics, you know, okay, does he chase a lot, you know, and he's in his fifth game, like, it doesn't make any sense. Because,
no, I'm not talking about him specifically. No, I'm talking about in general, what coaches are looking for, and why, what brought, I think, Alonso, this comment from Alonso is that these are the things that he was looking for,
right,
for improvement. And I think he saw it. And,
yeah.
You know, eventually the things that lead to production are the things that the coaching staff sure. wants to see. And I think I told my cousin this. I have a cousin in New York.
Yeah, John's famous cousin.
Yeah, my famous cousin, yeah. And I said, look, the only people who care daily about the results are the people in Vegas and the fans. Everybody else, the coaches,
cares about the results, I will guarantee.
No, the players are worried about the process,
well,
too.
Well, that's true.
That's their focus.
Yeah.
Because the good focus will lead to good results. Yeah. And you can't control the results all the time, especially in
everybody's
baseball.
Everybody's happy to get them.
Right. Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they're worried about it. The okay. players are worried about the process. They're not worried agreed. About the results as much. And if they get good results, they come. So anyway, we can have that discussion with our next panel discussion, because I'm going to get okay. into that. But let's move along, make a four-seam transition, and thank Alonso very much for being with us, and can't wait to have him again on the
thank
show.
Thank you vociferously.
Yes, but let's make a four-team transition and talk about the PLCS that just finished today. Thank goodness. It's like the Hawks like knew our schedule, and they said, you know, we want to give Japan Baseball Weekly the opportunity to talk about the Japan Series matchup for the first time when it's all decided. So we're going to do that tonight. The Hawks swept their way into the Japan Series, winning two games on the field with that one-win advantage they went into this best-of-five series with. Because they won the Pacific League pennant, they got that one win advantage. And so it wasn't one and done. It was two and through. Ha ha ha.
Wow.
That was my joke. That was my joke. Anyway, they're going to take on.
I'm sorry.
Thank you much. All right. So they're going to take on the Yomiuri Giants, the Central League winning Yomiuri Giants, starting Saturday at Kyocera Dome. No win advantage for either side. Although, since SoftBank has won 12 consecutive postseason games, I think it feels like they already have a one win advantage.
Yes, indeed.
So, anyway, we had game one in the PLCS on Saturday, and yes, I was watching it live for a change. You know, I like to watch these games and at my own pace. So sometimes I back up the player and watch something over and over again. But no, I decided I'm going to go live and tweet a little bit, even though I'm at the office working. And so I was doing that, and I see Manabu Mima, you know, the guy who we talked about earlier in the season, who doesn't have anything, it seems, elite stuff-wise. He's just out there, and he's going to give you a professional start, and he's going to get in and out of trouble, and that's what he does. And he was doing that on this day, and then in the sixth inning, he got the hook. So the Hawks ended up winning this game 4-3, but Mima got the hook. And I tweeted that Tadahito Iguchi, the Chiba Lotte manager, might have been making a Kevin Cash type move.
No, I don't.
In that he was, he was taking out a guy who was maybe he was at 82 pitches. He had allowed 7 hits, and a walk, and blah blah blah. But he usually squirms out of a lot of trouble. But the problem for me wasn't that he took him out.
Okay,
I was fine with him taking him out. My problem was replacing him with his fourth or fifth best reliever, Taiki Tojo. And that's where I had the issue. I suppose you're down a game theoretically, not theoretically, actually, just one, you know, it's the first game of the series, but you're already down a game. Why not go with Yuki Kadokawa, who has gotten out of some jams for you earlier this season, or Frank Hermann, or just somebody else? Why are you putting a guy out there who's just not your best, one of your best guys? You're just trying to get out of an inning. So I didn't like that. Maybe he liked the matchup. Maybe he liked the numbers of what Tojo had done early in the season. But I just didn't like that in that spot in the game. And yes, I'm picking on Kevin Cash, who took out Blake Snell in the World Series.
Go ahead.
But the thing about that is the pitcher he put in only gave up one hit. The Dodgers scored a run on a ground out and a wild pitch.
No,
so it wasn't a bad move. Actually,
Buckner, you know, everybody says, "Oh, the game ended on that play." The World Series ended on that play, and oh no, it ended the next day. Okay, sorry, but you know,
yeah, they don't care.
Yeah. People are, you know, it ruins a good story. The World Series should have been over when Bill Buckner didn't get the ball. Okay. And so it should have been over when Kevin Cash pulled his starting pitcher.
Yeah. So actually, again, you know, Tojo, it really wasn't all that bad a move. And I mean, what did they scored on an infield
correct
hit?
I mean,
and then some smart base running.
He got exactly the ball that he should have gotten. I mean, Tojo did his job, and so it wasn't a bad mood. It was just something that was waiting to happen. Of course, the reason it happened was because Mima, for the second time in that game, was throwing fat pitches again, and that's why it happened. That's why he had two runners on with nobody out.
Right.
I mean, he was lucky. Mima was lucky to get out of the first inning with no runs because it was fat pitch, fat pitch, fat pitch.
But that's what he does. He just throws them when the guys seem to be looking for something else.
Well,
he doesn't go throw it in the zone, they chase. I don't know how he does it. He's like little Mima magic.
Well, in this case, he got a good play in the outfield to save him a hit. And then he got single, single, single. And then he got double play. And then the same thing happened, you know, and then it's the sixth inning again. And he's already in good shape. You know, he's doing well, and fat pitch, and he's in trouble again. And then, you know, as it happens, it's not just one thing that happens. It's a chain of events. And then what happened after that was just a really tough play, tough ball to shortstop. I mean, it wasn't, you know, what can you do?
Yeah. I mean, it was an infield hit, and, sure, and we all know that. And then, but the play I think that a lot of people and you and I were talking about before we started recording was the Alfredo Despaigne stopping between first and second on a ground ball,
mm-hmm,
that just really smart base running. I mean, for me, you think about a lot of that weight having to stop, and we won't say
I
on a dime. Maybe
about that, it makes my knees hurt.
Yeah, you didn't stop on a dime. You stopped on a 50-cent piece, something bigger. But he stopped and he got made Shogo Nakamura chase him a little bit and then throw a ball to first. And, you know, again, I tweeted this. I didn't actually see the ball get dropped at the time.
Oh.
Yeah, I was at work. So I just looked up and I saw the play happen, and I said, well, they're going to review this and the runner is going to be safe. So I tweeted. So I was tweeting when the ball actually was dropped. And then I heard the announcer screaming that somebody's trying to come home and score. And so I saw that and I'm like, oh, what happened? And you can see Gracial coming home and sneaking by. So two guys you wouldn't imagine who would be involved in a play that involved base running and speed and all that stuff, but just really heady base running.
It was.
And that's,
it was a good play. I mean, I really liked the play that Nakamura did too, because it was exactly, you know, he did it by the book. He had it, you know, he looked the runner back at third. He made Gracial stop in his tracks and sort of lean back to third base. Then he found the runner. He tagged the runner. He threw to first base. So far, everything's going to plan. Okay. Okay, maybe he misses the ball, but Gracial, you know, if he had he didn't hesitate when Nakamura threw to first and took his eye off the runner, he sprinted home. He's going to gamble that the runner's going to be safe and he's going to beat the throw at home, which he was because Seiya Inouye dropped the ball.
Right. So, yeah, I think it was what was the situation? It was first and third?
It was first and third.
And after a sacrifice, so there was one out.
The ball was hit.
The second base. And so, yeah. So it turned out to be really heady play, and the Hawks scored there. And you're right. That did not end the game. And that was not the death blow. And eventually the Hawks got a run in the eighth inning.
Hirokazu Sawamura.
Yeah. Hirokazu Sawamura. Yeah, I mean, it was an infield hit by catcher, Takuya Kai. But, yeah, Sawamura, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you do. the bullpen had been good all season. You can't have walks and other things that Sawamura was doing to get in trouble in the first place. But, yeah, I mean, they weren't favored to win. You know what I really think? Well, we'll get to game two and then we'll talk about
You take what you can get. I mean, he can strike people out with the splitter. And if his command is okay, then if he can throw the pitch close to where he wants and he's calm and everything's copacetic, then no problem. And then when he gets in, then it's a problem.
Yeah, but two walks really kill, and he ends up getting credit for two hits allowed, and he's the loser in the game. But let's move on to game two, and this was another one. The Hawks end up winning 6-4, and yeah, I tweeted about this as well. Akira Nakamura hits a two-run shot in the second, then he hits another two-run shot in the fourth. And that turned a one-run deficit into a one-run lead. And Nobuhiro Matsuda followed immediately with another home run, a solo shot. And that put him up 5-3. And they never really looked back, even when Yuito Mori hopped on the high wire act in the ninth inning and loaded the bases.
Yeah, we probably thought, well, this is the last game before the Japan series. I gotta sort of live a little bit.
I got to get some work in. Yeah. But the Marines got three runs in the first inning off Nao Higashiyama, the Hawks starter, and he just couldn't seem to miss any bats. And he only lasted four innings and he allowed three runs on seven hits and three walks. And he hit a guy in the
dangerous. It was dangerous.
Yeah. The guy he hit with a curveball and that scuffed off of his helmet when he tried to duck out of the way. I mean, Higashiyama struck out four, but I wasn't watching. So I don't think any of them were looking, and they were just maybe chasing pitches that were just probably shouldn't have even been thrown, or they shouldn't have been swinging at. Let's put it that way. But so things seemed, seemed like a positive start. Seemed like the Marines had control of this game a little bit early on, but that just went away. Nakamura, I tweeted about him. I said, look, I don't care what any of your numbers say. It just seems like in the postseason, in late game situations, this is the last guy on earth anybody should want to see up there in the batter's box. And I did, our buddy Aozora, who I haven't really quoted that much this season, send out. Yeah, I know. He tweeted out some numbers about Climax Series home runs. Mm. And I will give you the name of the man who has the most. It is Seiichi Uchikawa, who is going to be leaving SoftBank after the season. So thank goodness we'll get him some place where he can play. But Nakamura is tied for second with four other guys with eight Climax Series home runs.
Wow.
Can you guess one of the guys on that list? Just one, either league.
Hold on. Four guys who have hit eight home runs.
Right, Nakamura is one of them.
Holy smokes. I'm going to say...
Just one guy.
I'm going to say Hayato Sakamoto.
No, they're all power hitters.
Oh.
Then all right.
I have no idea.
Time's up. Yeah. Alfredo Despaigne.
Okay.
Hideto Asamura and Tyrone Woods. That's the number. That's the company he's in. And I'm just telling you, he's probably the last guy teams want to see up there. And he has some memorable home runs in the postseason as well. And that's just the Climax Series. He has hit his share in the Japan Series as well. So I'll have to wait for Aozora to pump that out.
Did you get a good look at those?
Actually, no.
Okay.
But I just know that they they went in almost the identical spot in the stadium.
They were weird. They were weird. You know, these were the kind of pitches that you expect Yuki Inagita to hit for home runs. This is not Nakamura's typical, basically, I'm writing about this in my blog, wrote about this in my blog today. He's basically, I don't chase pitches. He doesn't even chase pitches near the edge of the zone until he's behind in the count. No, I mean, I'm not kidding. If it's close to, if it's could potentially be a ball, he doesn't want any part of it. He went after. He was looking for something low from Chin, Wei Yin. He was looking for something at the bottom of the strike zone because the first pitch fast in the second inning, first pitch fastball at the bottom of the zone, he reaches out and he pulls it. And in the next time up, as the fourth inning, I suppose, he gets a slider that's at the low and away. It's toward the middle, but it's still low. You know, he has to reach down and smack that thing. So he was just looking for something. You know, he was ambushing him. He was setting him up. It's like they said, Chen's going to throw you all bunch of stuff, but he's going to try to throw you stuff at the bottom of the zone, so be ready for it. And he says, okay, I'm going to be ready.
Yeah. Well, he was definitely the hero, and we've seen him do that before.
Yeah.
And again, for me, Iguchi did manage like his life depended on it. He took out Che Chen, but he inserted Fumiya Ono. And I mean, in a do or die situation, again, do you want your fifth or sixth reliever out there? Yeah. I don't even know where he ranks, but
yeah. Well, with Ono, I mean, with Chen, it wasn't the pitch that he gave up the home run to Nakamura on. You know, that's like, you know, you just got to tip your hat to the guy. And Chen was really upset. But it was the next one because he was upset and he threw his next pitch while he was upset and he threw a high straight fastball with absolutely no spin on it to Nobuhiro Matsuda. And he does, you know, he did show you what a professional hitter does with batting practice.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm not complaining that Chen came out of the game. I'm just saying, is that what you really want to put in?
Chen pitched I thought he pitched pretty well.
Yeah, he usually pitches well. It's not about his pitching well. It's about his I don't know. It's probably unfair to judge him because he wasn't here all season, and that's the toughest test you have to go into the postseason to face the Hawks. So Chen was fine.
Okay.
Again, if your life depends on it, and basically their postseason lives depended on it. Do you really want to give the ball to Ono? And he did. And again, not bad results from the pitcher himself, but is that how you want to manage? And you know, they had better pitchers out there at the end of this game, but even Frank Hermann, I'm sorry, toward the end, the business end of the game, but Frank Hermann gave up runs. I mean, it just didn't seem like, to me, that he told the team the message was, we've got to win today, and I'm going to do anything we can do to make sure we win this game. That's not the way he was managing in my mind. But maybe he had a different plan. Maybe the plan was just to get some of these young guys some experience because they figured they weren't going to win three in a row against the Hawks.
I don't think that was the plan. I guess the mystery.
That's the way he managed.
The mystery to me was, I was looking at the end of this game as Morey was stewing up trouble on the bases, you know, when he had the bases loaded with one out, and I was thinking, who's in the bullpen? And it's really nobody's. So
yeah,
there were six relievers left on the bench for both teams, and the only one who you would even really want to tell your mother you saw a relief pitcher would be Naoya Masuda. The other thing, like, no, they were just guys. They weren't actually relief pitchers. Don't get scared.
Yeah. So anyway, quick two games. The Hawks wrap it up, and Akira Nakamura has a great, great game. Another one to file away in the postseason annals for the Hawks. And so now they're going to meet the Yomiuri Giants in the Japan Series, which starts on Saturday at Kyocera Dome. And, you know, all the Hawks do is win Japan Series titles, it seems. And we've got what?
Got what?
They're going for the fourth in a row, and how many in the past 10 years? It's just boring. I don't want to add
up. It will be their whole 11, 14, it'll be their seventh.
Seventh, good grief. So I don't see the Giants. I don't know if they can survive a series with the Hawks. But what I thought would be a fun exercise for me would be, let's see how, if they were to win these games or four of these games, how they could do it.
Okay.
So here's how it would have to happen.
Okay.
So the Giants come in. They led the Central League in runs, but that means nothing against the pitching they're going to face. So throw that out the window. And I don't see them, the Giants, I don't see them giving up four or five runs a night, but there are going to be a couple of games probably where they do give up four or five, maybe even six runs. So Tomoyuki Sugano, the ace, has to do very well. And that means he has to go out and win low scoring games, including game one. And if he comes back, you know, in Japan, pitchers usually pitch once a week. I think the earliest they bring him back is game six. So he's going to have to win those two games. And we know that Kai behind the plate for the Hawks has a cannon locked and loaded, although the Marine stole a couple bases off of him, at least one.
He's not the guy he was in 2018.
Yeah. But he can control the running game. And and the Giants don't run that. The Giants, actually, I think they tied for the lead in stolen bases in the Central League. Well, so they steal their share of bases.
Masuda, who can steal.
Yeah. Yeah. But they had 80. So he wasn't the only guy.
Well, they've got a few guys who can run. That's Shinosuke.
Yeah. They do steal some bases. So we'll see. I think Kai can control the running game for the most part. So we'll have to see how that goes. But I think they're going to try to run a little bit because they're going to have to create some runs. I don't think they can just expect to maybe get a double here and then a walk there and double the guy in.
That's what the Carp tried in 2018. And we saw.
Well, I'm not saying with everybody.
That was the plan. You know, we're going to have to run on them so we can create some runs. And that didn't work out very well.
Yeah, I guess if you guys are listening, every idea I throw out there, Jim is just shooting it down.
I'm just creating
a scenario. I'm just trying to create it.
The Carp were kind of a fast team, but a team without really fast players. Where the Giants do have Shinosuke Shigenobu, who is a fast player, and they do have Daiki Masuda, who is a fast player. So I mean, those guys can really run. They could steal bases.
Yeah, neither one of those guys is going to play that much. They're going to come on as pinch runners.
Yeah,
so I'm talking about in general.
Yeah.
In general, throughout the game, starting in the first inning.
Every game he'll say, who's my pinch runner today? So we'll see him.
Okay, well, I'm talking about starting in the first inning and your everyday, daily.
Toronto's got to win two games. I think that goes without saying. And maybe pitch in relief as well.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's not part of the scenario that I've drawn up for them to win. So, no relief from him.
To run. I think they can run a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, let's say they try to run, and maybe it's not all just straight steals. There's a little bit of hit and run, some run and hit, some small ball, whatever they can do. And if they get these walks, they're going to probably try to move them over. And then after that, I think it's, as far as the pitching goes, Shohei Togo, I think, he's still just 20, but he's their second best pitcher. He's the one they threw out there in the playoffs, in the postseason last season. And I think all of that was in hopes that they could get him some postseason experience, which he has now. But he's going to have to keep the ball in the park. He had 18 starts. He allowed 12 home runs. So that doesn't bode well in terms of keeping the ball in the park. But he's going to have to limit the Hawks as much as he can.
Playing in Osaka, it's not as good a home run park as Tokyo Dome is.
Okay. Togo had 42 walks and 6 hit batters. So he's just got to be a little bit more efficient. And then Angel Sanchez is also an X factor. And if he's sharp, I think this is the key. If he's sharp and they can get a good 5-6 innings out of him, I think that's how they win the series. They're going to have to score, obviously, when he pitches. But I think back at that point in the rotation for the Hawks, I think they might have a better chance of generating some more offense. And of course, Okamoto has to get some hits. Sakamoto has to get some hits at key times and all these things that have to fall together. I'm picking the Hawks to win 4-2, but I think Jim had a more bleak prediction for the whole series.
I like what you're saying, and I think there are things I like about the Giants that I like the Giants better. I think the Giants catch the ball better than the Hawks do. The Hawks are, while they're talented athletically, they really, that infield hasn't played together a lot. It's a jigsaw puzzle, and the Giants don't have that issue. So I think that's a plus in the Giants' favor.
And our boy, Ukyo Shuto, a little bit shaky at second at times,
I mean, and you don't ever quite know who's going to be out there playing for him, so that's all right. I mean, that's part of their strength also. I think the Hawks have more platoon switches they like. And platoon switches are really tough on Tatsunori Hara because they drive him nuts. Really, I mean, he'll take a perfectly good pitcher and switch him out because, oh, wait, it's a right-handed hitter. You know, even if the guy's no good, he'll change. And there's also guys like they've never – I think they really don't know how to deal with guys like Joe Yukihara, who nobody's played against barely.
Right.
And
yeah, and then there's just that Central League inferiority complex that they're going to head into.
Inferiority complex. I think that when it comes to just basically throwing pitches and hitting pitches, I think the Pacific League teams are better. And that when they play against each other, you can see it. And I'm certain. I think it's you really can't tell. But I think when you see them in the same park, you will see it again.
Yeah, I think that's an inferiority complex. But I mean,
I think it's real to some degree. And I think the Hawks are going to beat them in four straight again.
In four straight. Okay. Yeah, I got the feeling he was a bleak.
Sugano beat Sugano this time. And see, last year, Sugano was, well, he was pitching and he had a bad back. And he was pitching because they asked him to pitch when he wasn't healthy. Mm-hmm. So having a healthy Sugano means the Giants. I'm going to give the Giants a win because I think Sugano is going to win a game.
Oh, all right. So four, not a sweep, a gentleman sweep, five games.
Sugano is going to win a game or if not Sugano, he's going to give them enough of a chance. They're going to open one door in that series.
Okay, so a gentleman sweep, five games.
Yep. So they're going to be in the same boat as most of the Central League teams against the Hawks.
The gutty little Central League teams. Good luck to them. All right, let's make a two-seam transition. Well, actually, this is more like a four-seam transition. I mean, what are we talking about? We're going way off topic. The final month of top players, and I guess they're lumping a little October and some November together. I don't even know the last time we did it.
Normally, they lump October and November together, but this year they're lumping October and November. Normally they lump September and October. Let me get this straight. Normally they lump September, the last 2 months of the season, so that's the same. But this year it's October and November instead of September and October.
Okay. All right. Well, and the announcement will come on Wednesday. So who do you have in the Central League? I guess Yudai Ohno, the pitcher, is probably going to win for this stretch, although he lost a game.
I've got Masato Morishita, the Carp.
Ah, yeah.
4-0, and he did allow one earned run in 37 innings.
Yeah. Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. Who do you have for the hitter?
Tyler Austin.
Yeah, Tyler had a good stretch there. He didn't hit a lot of home runs, though, right?
Well, nobody
hit drove in a lot of runs
last, you know, at the end of the season, which is typical at the end of the season, but yeah.
Okay. What about the Pacific League pitcher?
Okay, I'm going to go with Takeuchi Kishi. He went 5-0. I don't think he had as good as I don't have the combined stats, but it doesn't look like he had as good an ERA in October and November as now Higashihama, but he went 5-0 instead of 4-1. And probably, you know, the voters might have just said, oh, I think Higashihama gave up 6 runs in his last game. And so,
I'm
off.
You're out.
Yep.
You're 6 out. Runs. How about hitter for the Pacific League?
Yukinori Nagita.
Yeah, he was my guess, because they're all guesses. But yeah, he was my guess.
Well, I'm just going to stick with October because the numbers are bigger, and I don't have the numbers combined this year. So
okay,
in October he had he led the league with a 381. I'll just do the numbers that the selectors understand. 381 batting average. That's when you put the ball in play, guys. Corey Bear did count last time on base percentage, and he led the league in that 483. He led the league in slugging average in 588. So those are good numbers. We'll just say those are good numbers. He didn't.
Excellent stuff. Yeah. Well, one of my favorite players, so I will be rooting for him. Now we have some notes. We have a whole slew of notes that we want to get through. I don't know if we're going to have time to get through all of them and answer the question, but we will try. So Hayato Sakamoto of the Giants did reach 2,000 hits on the day that we recorded last week. That was Sunday. And he had a first inning double to left and a 5-3 loss to Yakult. Obviously, I saw some stories out there. Congratulations to him, first of all, and his ensuing chase for 3,000. But I saw a story in our paper in the Yomiuri Shimbun that said someone said he's not Ichiro. And so don't expect him to go that far. Now, he's the second youngest to reach 2,000 hits. And
youngest.
I'm sorry?
Who was the youngest?
I forgot his last name. Do you remember his?
Hachi Enomoto, Hall of Famer.
Enomoto, yeah. Okay, yeah. I had the first name because Kihachi is so rare. And I asked my wife about the name Kihachi, and she said, yeah, she said it's an old name. And I'm like, well, you know, but these names with numbers, they just confuse me to death. And that one was hard to read. And I'm looking at it, I'm like,
used to be really common in Japanese names. Yeah, he was, interestingly enough, when I started seriously writing my blog a couple of years ago, I wrote a essay, you know, this guy belongs in the Hall of Fame. And lo and behold, 3 months later, he was in the Hall of Fame. Who would have known? I'm not saying that had anything to do with it. It was just timing.
Timing. Yeah, well, timing is everything. So, the quest for 3,000, I don't think Sakamoto is very much into it, but we talked about him last week about the fact that I don't think he'll get there, but some people think he will, and it'll be a fun watch.
Calculated him as having if just based on what he's done so far,
mm-hmm.
as having a 28% chance of surpassing Isao Harimoto's record for most hits in NPB.
And that figure is?
3,085. So
3,085?
The chances for Hayato Sakamoto to get 3,086 career hits in NPB are about 28%.
Yeah, I don't think so. I got to be honest. What? He's already having physical issues, so I don't think so. But
you don't.
Hey, what do I know?
Think
I'm just a guy sitting in a room. What's that?
You don't think what? 28% is too high? You don't think it's
28 too high? Yeah, I give him an 8% chance.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. Next item up is that IO Carp second baseman Yosuke Kikuchi an apology. I've loved him for years. Yeah. In the preseason, I got drunk on stats and numbers, and I ranked Shuta Tonosaki of the Lions above him in the infield ranking that we did when we got that great question. And I just totally apologize because Kikuchi became the first player in NPB history to go an entire season with zero errors at second base. And he did it by still making all those fantastic plays that he makes. So you're number one, babe. I love you, man. I'm sorry. I won't cheat again.
Okay. I need a drop cloth or a tarpaulin. There's too much drool.
Okay.
First of all, I want to say,
I'll get you one of those Disneyland ponchos.
Fine, as long as it keeps me dry. Okay. Now, I just want to say, The two things are non sequiturs. He's a great fielder and he has 1,000 on base percentage. They're essentially they're completely irrelevant.
On base percentage?
Fielding percentage and being a great fielder are two things that are only abstractly, obtusely related. So I'm, you know, but we still had that great, wonderful line this summer, this autumn from Yutaka Takagi, the former Bay Stars, Taiyo Wales, second baseman, who held the career record for fielding percentage at second base in a season.
Uh-huh.
When somebody asked him on the show, they said, you know, he's got a chance to have 1,000. And he went, wow, that's really amazing. But you know what? 1,000 is so boring. Human beings should make mistakes. It was wonderful because it was really deadpan. It was, I know he was only being slightly snarky, but good for him.
Only. It's snarkasm, man. You gotta love it.
Come on,
Yes, the fielding percentage is what it is, and I'm just saying that it wasn't like he started out. Every player, I'm sure, starts out the beginning of the season with an aim of not making errors. But once you get past, you know, let's say in this season it was 120 game season, you get past 60 games, you still haven't made an error. I think it starts to become a thing in the back of your mind, and it grows and it grows and it grows. And of course, he sat out the final game. He didn't play because he didn't want to make an error. But I mean, by then, who cares? You know, he had already had 1,000 percent fielding percentage. I'm all for it. I love it. And because he made great plays. It wasn't like he went and said, you know, I'm not going to field this ball because I might make an error. You know?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, he was playing ball.
I'm with you. He's a terrific player.
He's great. All right. And lastly, Alex Ramirez is done as DeNA manager and had his walk-off ceremony, let's call it.
He had two, actually.
And, I'm sorry?
He had two. He had one in Koshien. Well, that was a send-off, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop interrupting.
Why?
That's like saying stop breathing, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's my chief joy in life.
All right. Well, he had his walk-off at the home stadium in Yokohama on Saturday, the same day as the PLCS game one. And he's done, gave a beautiful speech, very heartfelt, it wasn't emotional in that he was leaking and had, excess moisture being dropped from his eyes or anything like that. But he seemed emotional, and he, you know, the way he spoke, it sounded like he's never going to manage in Japan again. I hope that's not the case, but it kind of sounded that way. But and then, as we know, as we talked about on the show, I guess when may have been a month ago or 3 weeks ago, when our buddy Claudio Rodriguez was on the show, Daisuke Miura is set to take over. And the last bit of news we had was the fact that, and I can't stop laughing when I say this, is that Rakuten GM Kazuhisa Ishii is going to float down from the skybox and he's going to be the field manager.
Well, I'm going to, I have a word here because I know I've been critical of naming him GM. I think I've always found it to be mysterious. And okay, so what I want to say is that Ishii is a kind of difficult customer. He looks indifferent to people when they're talking. He often looks uninterested in what people are saying. He looks perhaps non-comprehending. But having spoke to him a couple of times in very informal circumstances, him just chatting with reporters on the field and also at, you know, just saying hi at the winter meetings, I found him to be very bright and cheerful in those settings.
Okay.
I find him to be a different person than he kind of is in public. And he has a reputation for not being very clever, and I think he cultivates a persona of his being sort of a not very intelligent. You know, he creates a kind of that's part of, he's gotten used to that. He sort of polished that. But I
kind of a goofy goes lucky.
Yeah,
goofy go lucky.
Kind of a goofy, yeah, goofy persona. But I have every, you know, what I want to say is I sincerely hope it's just kind of a defense mechanism and that he's actually much smarter. And I hope that it is something that he's sort of dealing with and overcoming, and and that if he has a, if he's having, you know, it's something he's can overcome and, you know, and actually do really good stuff. How wonderful is that? You know?
Yeah. I certainly look at that persona and that's why I'm laughing. I don't know what kind of manager he's going to be. Yeah. I didn't ever for one moment think that he was managerial type personality. So that's going to be an interesting watch for all us observers. But I'm sure he knows baseball, obviously.
Yeah.
The pitching part, I think he's actually going to be good for the pitchers. I think Seiichi Hoshino was the last manager they had who was a former pitcher.
They had Yoshinori Sato briefly, but yes.
Yeah. So I laugh, but, you know, I hope the best for the team. I just never pictured him as a manager. He just doesn't fit into that mold for me. So I have to overcome a lot.
I don't know him and I don't want to cast aspersions on his on that sort of goofy persona. I don't want to make that him. My hope is that he's got a lot more to show and he does it. I do know people who think, or at least they say they think of him very highly. And I want to think they're not putting us on.
Okay. All right. Well, look at the time. We're not going to be able to get to the question, but Jim does have an announcement about his next live viewing.
Yes. On Sunday, November 22, I will be hosting another live viewing for jballallen.com, and all subscribers and members are free to join. And that will be at 6:30 p.m. on Sunday evening, Japan time. And that is 6:30 p.m. is 4:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 1:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for you Pacific people.
And that'll be game two of the Japan series, so that should be fun. And after that game finally ends, we will be recording the podcast.
Yes.
All right. So we do have a question from Eric. Eric, we will get to that next week. Anyone else who has a question or comment, hit us up at JBW Podcast on Twitter with the hashtag #HighHeat. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on the Facebook page where you can leave us. It doesn't have to be a question. It can just be a comment. You can say something nice, like we had some people say nice things via email and on Twitter this past week. So thank you very much to all of you. We will talk to you next week as the Japan series is in full swing. Oh, swing. All right, guys, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your Japan series.
Swing. Party on, John.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag #HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.